sacrifice our offering, this innocent lamb of the dawn.
Don't you ever try to feed me anything like that again.
Just a PSA to our listeners, the savory Nature Valley cheese granola.
You know, or white cheddar specifically.
Yeah, I had one like a week ago, and I was like, I don't like this at all.
I tried it. I took a big hunk bite like a mouse would off a cheesy thing, and then I spat it out immediately. It was terrible. It was like chewing on like something made for a dog. The flavor...
It does kind of remind me of like a dog treat.
It probably is. The flavor of it is like stale cheeses and like sawboard pressings. It was not good.
Have you eaten any dog treats in your life?
Yeah, dog Oreo.
Dog Oreo?
Yeah, it's just Oreos for dogs. Like little cookies.
Okay.
Have you seen those?
No, I haven't. I mean, I've seen Oreo cookies, but not dog Oreo cookies.
Well, you make them for dogs, but they're not made of chocolate.
I get the kind of gist of it. Yeah, yeah.
I ate one of those. It was fine.
I've
never chewed like a pig's ear or a rawhide or anything.
I don't know. I feel like we've been doing this podcast long enough that I've probably told this story before, but...
They always love when people hear about dog food.
And I know you won't remember because you don't remember anything that's happened on this show. No. I was dared by, I don't know if it was a cousin or one of my younger siblings or something, that I wouldn't take a bite out of a bacon strip.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll do it. Of course, I should have like tried to get somebody to like pay me money or something. But I was just like, fuck it, I'll do it.
You're just like, the dogs can't tell. Maybe I won't either.
So I took a bite and my first reaction was, this does taste like bacon. And then slowly the more dog foody taste settled into my mouth.
Okay.
My tongue.
Yeah, on your taste buds.
And I thought it was disgusting and I went and rinsed my mouth out with water repeatedly and it didn't help for a little bit.
You should have had a Kroger Big K Zero Sugar Cherry Cola.
Yeah, I really should have, but that was back when I wasn't buying my own soda, so when I was a kid living at home.
Yeah, all you had
teenager.
To eat were, yeah, all you had to eat were bacon strips.
Yeah.
It's tough times.
That's why I buy sodas all the time now.
It's hard times, baby.
It is hard times. That's hard times. Speaking of hard times, nothing gets harder than Satan's lust.
Yeah. I've heard that before. That's a saying.
That is what they say. So this week we're...
Do you want me to press a button?
I don't know. You know me. My brain doesn't work.
Okay.
So yeah, this week we're talking about Satan's lust, which...
I don't have a button for the devil.
Yeah. that is something we're missing.
I've got a ghost. Welcome to 5 weeks of fright.
So yeah, this is,
the Raincoat Report.
This is the Raincoat Report. I'm boss here with Jeremy.
Yeah.
And it's, 5 weeks of fright, as you've said, and booed.
It's 2 weeks in fright now.
Well, yeah. Well, this is our second week of fright.
Mm-hmm.
And if we really consider that this episode is only just beginning, really, we still have 4 weeks of fright to look forward to. If you include this episode, that hasn't really gotten started.
Yeah. Time's tough.
Time is tough.
It's hard times.
So, God damn it.
Tribute to Dusty Rhodes.
I need to get you a hard times button. Baby, that's hard times. So, yeah, this week we're talking about Satan's Lust, which is a film that my Plex server tried to assign as a Anthony Spinelli film. The other places on the internet that I've looked for it have not really attributed it to anybody, so I'm not sure if it's Spinelli. It does have a bit of a Spinelli stink to it.
It feels like early Spinelli, but maybe more focused overall.
Yeah, it's certainly not the worst Spinelli we've seen, if it is a Spinelli.
He got his Adderall script filled.
But this is a hardcore film from 1971, about what's really going on behind the scenes in Hollywood at the studios.
We've exposed both the psychiatric industrial industry and the film industry as satanic fronts.
That's true.
I think we need to keep ripping the mask off. And we have 5 weeks, 5 points to a pentagram.
Oh.
I think this, we're going to bust open. I've been reading this book called Cults That Kill, and it's from the 80s, and it's about, it's pretty much just interviews with cops that have done cases that are occult-based.
Okay, yeah.
Most of it seems like bullshit.
Right.
But I think I'm going to get to the heart of it.
Okay.
I read one thing. It was a passage about stoners. Would you like me to read that?
Absolutely.
I have it saved on my phone. I don't remember which detective this is, but he's a detective, so imagine I'm doing like a pig-like voice. Also, there's a religious aspect. We have two juvenile officers who started looking into gangs and found a phenomenon no one paid much attention to. They found one group, the stoners, that had the ability to move from one area to another with total immunity. That's unheard of in gangs. They were trying to figure out what was going on, and they found that the stoners were a subculture within the subculture of gangs. They wrote a paper that said the stoners were similar to a religion. The paper inferred that these people practiced some kind of religious rites. Day and night, the lonely stoner seems to practice religious rites. You know that one? It's Kid Cudi.
Nice.
Yeah, that was my own addition at the end. But, did you know that about stoners?
I should have known that about stoners. I know enough of them.
Yeah. I do move pretty seamlessly between social cliques, you know?
That's true.
Maybe he's on to something. But I'll tell you, he wasn't on to Satanic Films Incorporated, which seems like a pretty obvious front.
Yeah. You would think that if you were a satanic cult starting a film company, you would come up with something at least slightly, like even just like Mephisto Films or something like that would have probably been more cover.
You could have just done it like the Natus, like the Satan backwards or something.
Yeah.
You know.
How Neil Bogg is Goblin spelled backwards?
Or Alucard.
Oh, yeah.
Dracula. At least mixed up.
Yeah.
You gotta mix it up. And a failure to mix it up means that me and Boss will expose you for what you are.
Speaking of exposures, while I'm thinking about it, you know, 5 weeks of fright doesn't mean that we're just talking about seven films. Because, in fact, the Raincoat Report has a Patreon at patreon.com/raincoatreport. And this Friday, we're going to be talking about another film that's a bit on the spooky side, certainly on the psychological horror side.
It's got an interesting psychology. I think that there's a technical term for it that I'm not allowed to say.
Okay. Well, regardless, it is a AVN Award winner for best film, and it's
30 years in the making.
Yes, and from multiple creators that we've covered before. But yeah, look forward to that this Friday. And if you're not subscribed to the Patreon, why aren't you? $5 a month. You get two bonus episodes, including two spooky episodes this year. And early access to our episodes. And maybe ad-free. I mean, they're definitely ad-free, but as far as the main show's concerned, I'm not sure how much longer we'll have ads. We'll see.
One of the ones had ads that I listened to recently.
We currently have ads that I'm sure of. I don't know how much longer in the future we will.
I noticed you're reading the ad again and not me.
Yeah.
That's understandable.
No, they make us, well, they tell us to, they tell us to re-record it every month.
Have you met a guy?
No.
That makes you do it?
No. We're too far down in the Spotify family to be noticed. They're spending all their attention talking to Joe Rogan.
Why haven't we been invited on Rogan?
I don't know. It's kind of fucked up now that I think about it.
We're
part of the same broadcasting partnership.
Network.
Yeah, our network.
Yeah, he should have us on and we'll do like
We're basically on the Joe Rogan network.
I've been on the Joe Rogan Experience before, but for something unrelated to this.
Okay.
Yeah, I was on there talking about, it goes about like skull shapes.
Was that like phrenology or whatever?
Well, whatever you call it, some skulls are better than others. And you know what else I like? I like when skulls are spooky mostly, actually.
Yes, it is phrenology. I had to double check.
I knew what it was.
I thought it was that, but I wanted to double check because I wasn't sure. Anyhow.
Yeah, that's the thing is you're the insecure one and I'll just say whatever is in my head.
Like when we were certain that Joey Silvera was dead.
I killed him myself. Shot him in the back, at least. I guess he survived.
You're the reason why he's in a wheelchair, though.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. I hope he's not actually in a wheelchair. Anyhow.
I think he's still standing.
Oh, like Elton John?
Yeah.
Satan's Lust.
Anthony Spinelli, potentially.
We get appearances by George Buck Flower.
Probably the biggest name in this. I didn't realize quite how much he had done, but he's in some big stuff. He's minor characters in such popular films as Back to the Future and unpopular films like The Village of the Damned remake.
We need to do a Six Degrees of Kevin Bacon, but it's like from porn film to mainstream film.
I don't think it would take too long.
George Buck Flower is a good one. Ron Jeremy's got some crossover at least, so you might have to do a couple extra steps there, but
mm-hmm.
George Buck Flower is really good. Sharon Mitchell was in Maniac with Joe Spinell, who was in The Godfather.
The Godfather is a film that I've never seen, which has Bruce De Niro. And he is in Taxi Driver, starring Kevin Spacey.
Yes.
Bacon.
Kevin Spacey Bacon.
Kevin Spacey's the evil one, right? He's
yes.
The rapist.
Yes.
They cleared him, but I don't know.
Did they clear him?
I think that some charges were dropped. You know, it's one of those things where like he probably just had way more money than the kids he molested.
Yeah, that makes sense. He did
allegedly
play
molest.
He did play Lex Luthor in one of the
Superman.
Superman. That and man.
Superman, Batman.
That's Superman.
I know. He was also the evil man in House of Cards, which
yeah.
I never watched. But what I did watch, though, was, as we have mentioned several times before, Satan's Lust.
I think that I've seen Judy Angel, who plays Pamela in, like...
The Office?
I don't know.
Is there a character named Pamela in The Office?
There is a Pamela... Wait. There's a Pam... Yeah, Pam is in The Office.
You just call her Pam. Okay.
I've
got name blindness.
Maybe I haven't seen her in something. She just looks like a woman who's in all of the exploitation films. But she... at least from what I could tell. Oh, wait. Yeah, I'm not sure that she was in anything I've ever seen, so. But she just looks like that type, which sounds really dismissive, and I apologize for even saying it now. We've got...
You just talk yourself into a hole over there.
We got George Buck Flower and a cast of unknowns who take us into the seedy underbelly of the Hollywood machine.
Mm-hmm.
And we figure out how films actually get made.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do.
And we get to see the face of the devil himself.
Yes, we do.
So strap on, strap in, and strap on your strap-ons. It's time to talk Satan's Lust right after we get back from this break.
Thank you.
All right, I've got breaking news for you.
Did something happen?
IMDb says that Judy Angel, who I thought I'd seen in a bunch of other movies, died in 1970. Which must have been the same year this was shot, because it says...
So spooky.
71 or 72, depending on where you look for this movie.
To me, it sounds like she's a ghost.
She is probably a ghost.
That's why I pressed the ghost button.
Well, without any further ado, let's talk about Satan's Lust. So we open on a shot of a skeleton and a fake bat flapping around with a sign in the background that says Satan's Lust. Just kind of painted on like a piece of board or something. Then we cut to a woman tied to a table. First, she's under a cover, surrounded by some robed figures, including, but not limited to, as we will find out, Boris Mandrill, Edith Goh, and, of course, George Buck Flower, Mannheim Jarkoff.
Yeah, which is a great name.
Yes. There are multiple jump cuts, likely not there originally, because it looks like there's just missing footage here.
I don't know if it's just... It could be. I thought maybe it was just probably part of the editing process at this point. It's just like, we don't have transitions. I'm just cutting this all together.
It could be a little bit of that, but I also feel like this comes from a print for sure.
Yeah.
There's a long history of just frames getting cut out of these.
Frames or entire scenes.
Yeah, sometimes
added to someone's private stash.
Yeah.
Yeah, as we've learned. It's a CD business, so we're in.
Yes. But we see this tied up woman's uncovered and naked, and the robed figures turn around and start disrobing. Mannheim Jarkoff is there in a black robe, and Boris is there in a red robe. And Edith is there, and it strips down to lingerie and wearing a strap-on dildo. As Mannheim chants, the woman with the strap-on here, Edith, starts fucking the bound woman. Boris starts to fuck her mouth as the leader here, Mannheim, is chanting a prayer to Satan to accept this sacrificial offering.
It sounds like he's chanting in Mandarin or some other language at first.
Yeah.
It's got the vibe of the like the Peanuts cartoons with the adults going wah 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 wah. But eventually, yes, the words become discernible and they are chants to Satan, as we know and love.
So Edith starts to blow Mannheim as Boris continues to fuck the bound woman's mouth. We see a shot of the bound woman's breast being covered with what appears to be fake cum, which we see a lot of in this film.
It's pretty much all fake.
Yep.
But it's always excessive, too.
Yes, that too.
It's fun. Well, that's how you know it's evil. The devil's cup overrunneth.
So we see Edith blowing Mannheim more, and then we see her breasts covered in a big blast of fake cum as well. We then cut away to a black cat walking around an altar, and then cut back to our three cultists chanting as the bound woman is still laying there. They've apparently redressed.
It seems like the film almost starts over again.
Yeah. So Boris pours some sort of oil or something onto the bound woman's breasts and torso before pulling out a large torch and carrying it towards her. We hear a scream, and then we get a cutaway to shots of an altar before cutting to the next scene, which is something completely different. We hear a knock at the door, and it's answered. It's Pamela Goodwright visiting Wayne Stryker.
Those are some good names.
Yeah. Wayne invites Pamela. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wayne invites Pamela to sit down and notes that it's been 8 years and she's as beautiful as ever. Wayne offers Pamela a drink, but she wants to talk to him about Carla. Wayne tells her, "Oh, I read about that last week. Pamela says, "It's said that she died in an auto accident, burned and alone." But Pamela asks Wayne if he remembers Carla driving when she was in college. And Wayne puts it together. Carla was colorblind and never drove. She never got her license. Wayne realizes something strange must have happened, and Pamela says that's why she had to come there, noting that there must be an explanation.
I feel like we're getting off to a pretty good start here.
So I want to take a step back. We have a colorblind friend, and he can drive.
No, he can't.
Well, that's a good point.
No, he's fine. He kidnapped me one time and wouldn't let me go to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I know he can drive. And then we got his, another time we got his Jeep stuck in the mud.
Yeah. It was one with the earth. I'm surprised that it ever left.
Yeah. Someone stole the battery.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I feel like I told that. Probably. Must have told that tale, but yeah. We got back there the next day, and someone had popped the back and got in and just popped the front and took the battery out. But yes, he gets around. And also, these people look well past college age. I think there was time for her to learn.
Yes. Well, yeah, they said that it had been 8 years since they saw each other, so yeah. I imagine that like they were in college 8 years ago, probably.
Yeah.
So in 8 years, she certainly could have learned. Wayne says that he heard that Carla was working at a movie studio there in Hollywood. Satanic Films. So they decide that they can try checking there. Wayne serves them both drinks, and Pamela asks him why he never got married. Wayne says that he could never forget about Pamela, which makes her blush. Pamela switches gears back to saying that they have to find out what happened, rambling for a minute before Wayne grabs her jaw, kisses her, and says, "You just let me be your daddy. I'll take care of everything."
Fuck. I burned my nose.
So they make out a bit more, and Wayne starts rubbing her breasts over her shirt and then caressing her legs as some orchestral music kicks in.
I'm going to say this is an Anthony Spinelli film because it has weird dialogue during all the sex scenes.
After a bit, Wayne starts unbuttoning Pamela's blouse and getting some over-the-bra breast grabbing going. Wayne starts to undress, and we eventually cut to Wayne in his slacks while Pamela's in her bra, panties, and garter belt and thigh highs. Pamela rubs Wayne's nipples while she gives his mouth a sort of tongue-fucking with her tongue.
She does like a, kind of like a lizard would do.
Yes. It's almost as unsettling as anything we'd have seen in Hardcore.
Yeah. The music is cloying. I'll say it is it's just a very like annoying, non-erotic, sounds like Swan Lake type stuff. And it goes on through the entire scene.
Yeah.
Not a fan. Also, this scene is lit in kind of like a Bava way where part of it's red and part of it's kind of bluish green at times. Yeah. I think those are the only gels they had.
Pamela licks his chest and belly a bit, and as we zoom, we see that she's now down to her garters and thigh highs, no more bra and panties. She begins to lick and suck Wayne's cock. Then we cut to Wayne pushing his cock inside of Pamela, fucking her as she lays on her back on the couch, and he sort of leans in sideways by her hips. Wayne spends a couple of minutes fucking her this way, and then we cut to Pamela on his lap riding his cock cowgirl. We then cut to Wayne fucking Pamela missionary on the couch, and we eventually see a very sweaty Wayne swinging his head back and forth, and Pamela doing the same to suggest the ecstasy of lovemaking, I guess.
I think it's, they've reached orgasm, and this is what that looks like.
But we cut to more penetration, more head shaking, and eventually we see Wayne pull out and come on Pamela's bush.
This might be real. Perhaps it is.
Perhaps.
What I'll say is, I thought they had a murder to investigate.
Yeah.
And also, when this scene first started, when they first start like kissing and like making out on the couch, it pans away. I thought we were going to like cut away from this scene
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For a moment or two, which would have been interesting.
Well, there's probably a cut of this where it does.
Yeah. It's just, since it's from 1971, I feel like it's probably kind of on the fence about, I guess, how much they can get away with.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wasn't sure how it would break. And it broke. It broke me.
So we cut to Wayne waking up Pamela as he yells to her that he found satanic films. He's naked, pointing at an entry in the phone book as Pamela's trying to hide under her blankets. He's doing some L.A. area street name dropping. Kind of like the, oh God, what's this SNL sketch? Is it the Californians? Is that what it's called?
I don't know. I'm sorry, buddy.
There's a SNL sketch in the like Fred Armisen era that was a recurring sketch where everybody's talking about their L.A. drive that they had to do to get there, and it's a whole thing. Anyway, that would have been more funny if you had any idea what I was talking about. God damn it. Yeah, the Californians is what it was called. Anyhow.
It's like the Aristocats.
Dragon Ball Z picks up 5 years after the end of Dragon Ball. Nope, that was the wrong one. Okay. So Wayne notes that this place is owned by Mannheim Jarkoff, adding that that's an odd name.
Sure is.
His attention, however, is quickly diverted by Pamela beginning to lick and suck his cock.
I thought she'd wanted to find her friend.
She's too cock hungry for all that right now, apparently.
Mm. It's been 8 years. Eight that's long true. Years without Wayne and his mustache.
Wayne asks her, don't you want to go to Satanic Studios? And Pamela tells him, after breakfast. She continues to suck his cock, and Wayne stops trying to plot his trip to Satanic Studios. After a couple of minutes, Wayne finishes, and we see his cum dribbling out of Pamela's mouth as she gives it a few more strokes with her lips. We abruptly cut to the offices of Satanic Films. Mannheim Jarkoff tells them that Carla was a member of the family, and they were sad to hear about her drug problems. Pamela says that Carla didn't have a drug problem, and she couldn't drive. She emphasizes that something doesn't add up, and she explains that if they can be of any help, to let them know, or even the police. This gets Mannheim to react in concern. He assures them that there's no need to get the police involved, but he'll call around to some people they know and get back to them. Wayne leaves his card, and he and Pamela leave.
What's Wayne's card say?
My name's Wayne, and this is where I live. I assume he doesn't have a job based on what we see in this film.
Yeah, he just has time to fuck around and do independent investigation.
He's an actor who's not getting any gigs.
Yeah, that's how he ended up in this movie.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. We fade out and back in, and Mannheim yells at Boris for not disposing of Carla's body properly. Edith, their female friend here, tells Mannheim to leave Wayne to her, noting that he arouses her. So Boris suggests that they call him, as he puts it, adding that he'll know what to do. He throws up devil horns with his hands and starts calling out to Satan, but Mannheim stops him. Mannheim says that he's going to use this as an opportunity to test the girl, and cackles in laughter, which continues as we fade into the next scene.
They're a bit more intense than that. They're like,
it's very, very villainous.
Yeah. Well, George is really hamming this role up.
Yes, he is.
So I'm glad he's here. He provides a lot.
We see Wayne getting out of the shower and answering the phone. On the other end, Pamela's talking about some research she's been doing at the library. Apparently, she's looking into the names associated with satanic films. She first talks about a man named Boris Mandrill, who was tortured on the rack and burned at the stake in Warsaw in 1815 for doing something to children and sorcery.
Oh,
She adds that his body wasn't in the coffin for the burial for some reason.
That's so the names of the people at the studio or the names of the people that she's finding in these witch books.
Yes.
That's pretty good. I like that they didn't go through any effort to change their names.
No.
Even though they might have been famous enough to be written about.
Wayne asks what she's getting at, and she says she's not sure. She then mentions a woman...
What do you mean she's not sure? It's very obvious.
She then says that there's a woman named Edith Goh who was burned in Salem in 1802, and she was supposed to have died laughing. And the weird thing is, after they put out the fire, they couldn't find her body. Wayne asks Pamela if she believes all this, and she says no, but it's kind of creepy. Wayne then asks what Pamela found out about Jarkoff. She says that he runs a reputable film company and has never broken the law. Pamela says she just talked to Jarkoff, in fact, and he has some correspondence he found of Carla's. So Pamela is going to stop by and get it from him. Wayne tells Carla that he doesn't trust Mannheim and not to go over, but Pamela tells him that she knows his type and he's harmless. As Pamela is saying this, we see a black cat walking across Wayne's floor. Wayne tells Pamela to hold on because a cat got in, and he tells her to call him when she gets back home. So we have a hard cut to Wayne, wrapped in a towel, face to face with Edith. He's stumbling as he tries to ask her what she wants. And we see her hypnotize him with some sort of amulet. She tells him to get down on his knees, and he does as he's told.
Yes.
Just as any of Fernando's victims would have done.
Yeah. She's a witch. She can turn herself into a cat.
Yes.
She can hypnotize a man.
Yep.
Good. Good for her.
So we see Edith is holding up her dress to reveal her bush. Edith tells Wayne to lick. He does momentarily, and he stops, and he calls her a witch. He then stands up, and Edith gets down and starts to suck his cock. After a bit of this, Edith stands up and starts stroking Wayne's cock as it points at her vagina. We get a long slow-mo shot of her stroking his cock with some eerie music. We eventually cut to a shot of Edith's bush being hit with a very fake load of cum.
Yes, he's blasting ropes of hand lotion.
Yeah. We cut to Wayne and Edith sitting on his couch. Wayne asks what happened upstairs, and we hear Edith's voice as a voiceover. She notes that she hasn't felt anything like this in 300 years, but then she declares she can't be in love. It'll destroy her. We then cut to Mannheim talking to Pamela. There's at least a bit of missing footage as we get some jump cuts here, but the gist of it is that Mannheim tells Pamela that Carla was associating with some bad people. But, soon enough, he's hypnotizing Pamela with his amulet.
Get me one of these amulets.
Yeah.
You can do all kinds of stuff with it.
Mannheim makes Pamela stand up. He laughs like a cartoon villain. You were going to the police, weren't you? He tells her they're going to see how strong she really is. He tells her to take off her skirt, and she follows his command. He then tells her to take off her blouse, and she again does as she's told.
Yeah, he's sort of doing like a Vincent Price.
Yeah.
He's very arch.
He then tells her to take off her panties. Mannheim gives us more villainous laughing and has Pamela bend over his desk. He begins to play with her holes from behind before beginning to fuck her doggy style. We then see Mannheim working some lube out of an old-fashioned metallic tube.
And you know what that means in 1971.
Indeed. He works his finger into Pamela's ass with it. He then wipes his finger and begins to fuck her in the ass from behind as he makes weird faces at the camera. So the Internet Adult Film Database had a note on here that says Buck Flowers performs sexually in this movie. He performs anal sex with an actress, not a double. I did not see any penetration here. I think this is a softcore scene, other than him putting a finger in her ass.
Hmm. But, you know, it's... Maybe there's something missing from this one.
That's true. That could be the case.
If someone has that one in their, like a vault down in their basement. The rare George Buck Flowers prolapse tape.
But yeah, if you...
The rosebudding tape.
Ugh. Rosebud.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you have that footage in your closet, send it over to AGFA.
Yeah. Or to us. So yes. I'll look at it.
Yeah.
I'll examine it.
Yeah. Every frame.
And I'll sell it.
We then get a close-up of her ass being covered in fake cum. Mannheim leans down, resting on her back. We cut to Edith yelling at Mannheim because he let the woman go. Mannheim tells Edith that she's a simple child and he can have her back anytime he wishes. He says that she's putty in my hands. Edith, Mannheim, and Boris are all in their capes, and Boris starts his satanic chants as he holds up a chalice and drinks from it and passes it to his partners in devil crime. Mannheim says a prayer to Satan, and then we get our first shot of Satan's face.
He's an evil pig.
Yes, he's an evil devil man with a pig nose.
Mm-hmm. I think he's the image they picked for the cover of this like release set, right?
Yes, so this, to interject here, this was AGFA's Smut Without Smut Satanic Porno Night.
Mm-hmm.
Or Satanic...
Something like that.
Something like... Satanic Horror Night, I think it is. Yeah. Anyhow, there was like... I think there was a main feature that cut parts of this and a couple other movies together mm-hmm. as their Smut Without Smut, but it included this and... I think a couple other movies as special features in their full smut versions.
Yeah.
And that's how we watched this.
It's great. This is sure smutty. They didn't cut anything out that hadn't already been cut out by someone else.
Yep. Satan calls out Edith for failing them and falling from the throne of evil for having love with a mortal. Satan asks her if he should make the man die in agony, or if instead Edith should be punished. Edith says that he can't die, and that she'll take the punishment. Satan tells Mannheim to take care of this, and we cut to Edith strapped naked to the table of their ceremony room, being weakly whipped by Mannheim.
Yeah, well, spooky wind sounds.
Yeah.
Play.
We get a close-up of her vagina covered in white glue. And eventually, Mannheim cries out to Lucifer, "Thy will is done!" We see Mannheim and Boris with their cocks being sucked by Edith, who's still on the table. Mannheim calls out to Satan, asking if he wishes for them to bring him Pamela Goodright. We hear Satan's voice commanding that they bring her to his altar, then laughs hysterically. We cut to Pamela laying naked in her lit bedroom under the covers. We see Boris make his way into the room through the window, protected only by a curtain, wide open. Boris pulls out a rag and covers it with, I guess, some ether or something.
A little chloroform.
Chloroform.
Yeah.
And he holds it over Pamela's face, taking her from sleeping to being fully knocked out, I guess. So Boris pulls back Pamela's blanket and the camera zooms in on her vagina. We cut to see Boris bottomless, and he soon climbs on top of Pamela and mounts her missionary.
Don't forget that Boris gets a little sniff for himself, too.
Yes, he does. Boris says, "I remember, you're my little Katrina."
My little 11-year-old Katrina.
Yes, he adds my 11-year-old Katrina. And he starts to fuck Pamela missionary.
I think I hadn't quite heard the bit on the phone earlier where they said Boris had done something with a child.
Yeah.
So this came as a shock. I was like, ew.
Yeah, we cut to a penetration close-up for quite a while here.
I'm sending Boris to jail.
Yeah. But he seemingly finishes inside of Pamela, and we get a close-up of his balls and his dick dangling when he pulls out.
He fucks real slow and weird.
Boris gets up and rubs Pamela's chest a bit. He tells her, "Now, Katrina, Lucifer calls." Boris redresses and starts to attempt to bind Pamela's hands when there's a knocking at the door. It's Wayne. This spooks Boris, and he rushes out the window. Wayne makes his way into the room after Boris is gone, finding Pamela naked and uncovered on the bed. Wayne yells and shakes Pamela until she wakes up. She says, "I feel like I've been fucked." She tells him that she had a nightmare, and Wayne tells her that it's all right and that he'll stay with her tonight. Wayne immediately starts to play with her clit, and we cut to Wayne on top of Pamela, rubbing his cock on her breast before straddling her chest so she can suck his cock.
Mm-hmm.
After a couple minutes of this, Wayne caresses Pamela more, and we get cut to her fucking her as they lay on their sides face to face. Wayne yells, "Darling, I'm going to do it, honey. I'm going to do it. Do it, darling. Do it, darling," she says. I thought he was going to cream pie her, but we get a shot of her back being covered in fake cum.
Yeah, and don't neglect, do you recognize the song that's playing?
I don't recall.
It is an instrumental version of the Beatles' Good Day Sunshine.
Oh.
Yeah, it was... It was very obvious to me. I was like, oh. I was like, can you fuck with the Beatles like that? I guess you can.
Yeah, apparently they got away with it.
They got away with it. And not once, but twice.
We cut to Wayne awake, laying next to Pamela, who's naked in bed but asleep. He covers her and gets out of bed and grabs his clothes.
Mm-hmm. And during this, you hear a little bit of an instrumental version of Yellow Submarine.
Oh. We cut to Wayne returning to his home and laying down on his couch. We cut to the room bathed in red light, and there's a knock at the door. Wayne gets up and answers the door, and it's Edith. She tells him that she's happy to see he's okay, almost crying with concern. He asks what she's doing there so late, and Edith confesses, "I'm a witch." Wayne doesn't seem to believe her, and instead focuses on grabbing her breasts and groping her.
Wayne's not a bright guy.
No, he isn't. He's just horny.
Yeah, he's just horny. He saw this lady turn from a cat to a lady.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't believe that you're a witch. Skinwalker, maybe. Not a witch.
Edith tells him that she's serious. She's been a witch for over 300 years. Wayne starts to play with her clit, and the conversation seems to be over as they grind against each other. Edith starts begging for Wayne to lick it, and after a bit, we cut to Edith straddling Wayne's face as he licks her pussy. She then mounts Wayne cowgirl and rides his cock for a bit. She dismounts and strokes his cock, and I think he may have actually finished off in this scene. Edith then leans back and starts to fuck herself with a candle. We then hear Satan's voice say, "Then you shall be punished now." We cut to Wayne's face as he looks down to where Edith was and starts screaming. After a moment, we cut and see what he does. A skeleton holding a candle where Edith was.
Yes. She was a witch after all.
Yes.
I called it when I saw her doing that with the candle. I saw him screaming. I was like, oh, this bitch turned into a skeleton.
We cut to a shot inside a car, and it's Boris and Mannheim driving around. Mannheim talks about how Edith was weak and couldn't kill that man. But Mannheim says that they can kill and make Lucifer happy.
They're going to kill Holly Goodhead.
We cut to Mannheim and Boris praying to Satan. We get cutaways to Lucifer's face as we watch Boris begin to fuck Pamela, who's tied down to the table in their ceremony room. He eventually pulls out, and we see Pamela coated in fake cum. A siren sound effect fills the room as Pamela...
I have that one on lock. That's one of the ones I do have.
As Pamela lights a torch... Or, wait. A siren sound effect fills the room... As Boris lights a torch and laughs maniacally, raising the torch to the camera.
They don't seem to notice these incredibly loud sirens at first.
No. But eventually Mannheim yells to Boris that it's the police and they have to get out of there. So we cut shots, zooming down the road, and hear Mannheim screaming at Boris to go faster.
Yeah, it looks like we've got some stock footage of a VW bus careening about.
Yes, and finally... Watch out as the camera zooms towards the guardrail and we see a windshield cracked. We cut to Pamela and Wayne sitting down on Wayne's couch talking to a police officer who tells them the Mandrill's car was found at the bottom of Malibu Canyon. The officer refers to this as ghastly business, noting the steering column impaled him. Wayne asks if they found Jarkoff, and the officer says not to worry, they found his charred clothes. He adds, there were no human remains, but no one could have survived that wreck.
Oh, no.
The officer leaves, and Pamela tells Wayne, it's over.
The officer is great. He says, well, that's about wraps it up twice.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, oh, about wraps it up.
But yeah, Pamela tells Wayne it's over, but poor Carla. Wayne tells her not to worry about it. Never again. Pamela winces and then says that she feels sick. Almost like morning sickness, she says.
Shit.
Morning sickness, Wayne asks, and then we get a cutaway to Satan's face and hear his laugh. And then we cut to the skeleton and the bat we saw at the beginning of the film, but instead of the film's title in the background, the sign says, End.
Yeah.
And that was Satan's Lust. And what a lusty fella he is.
Yeah, he's the spicy guy.
He's a spicy guy with spicy tastes. Mm-hmm. And spicy takes. Just follow his Twitter.
Follow his ex.
His ex. All right. Well, we will take a quick break and then we'll be back to give our final thoughts on Satan's Lust. All right, we're back on the Raincoat Report, and we just got done praying to Satan, and now it's time once again for
the Raincoat Review.
Bless our glorious master. I don't know what happened. I thought this was a fine film.
Okay.
That's it.
Fair enough.
It's certainly not as over the top as last week's film.
No, not at all.
It would be difficult to achieve that twice. Yeah. Lightning doesn't strike twice. Ever.
This is a precursor to that film, though.
Yeah, this does feel...
This film had to crawl before hard gore could run.
Yeah. They skipped walking altogether.
Yeah, they went straight from crawling to running.
Yeah.
Because they were being chased by a spooky ghost. Ah.
But yeah, this film does it does bring to mind last week's film, as well as a few other films we've covered. Notably, this makes me think of the Bride's Initiation.
Yeah.
On maybe kind of a once again on kind of a lower budget. But I do think if this is an early Anthony Spinelli film, it's considerably better than some of the other ones we've had a chance to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
It's roughly an hour long with an unknown amount of content maybe cut out. But probably this probably ran like an hour and 15 or something.
Yeah.
Maybe at some point. So it's a tight little film that, for the most part, for a pornographic horror film is fairly engaging. There is like the germ of an idea that they're going to go solve this murder.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite go that way, but the way in which it does go about is pretty amusing.
Yeah.
It's definitely a mixed attempt at making a film. I would say like it's a mixed effort.
Yeah.
I would say there's stuff about it that I really appreciate. While it also hits some of the same low notes as pornography around this time can.
Yeah.
Notably, the sex scenes are not very well shot. You get a lot of under the balls type penetration.
Yeah.
Things like that, static shots, that sort of thing. But the story stuff is pretty wild.
Yeah.
I like that we have a witch that transforms into a cat and vice versa. I love that we have a rubber devil.
Yeah.
It's all the kind of things, you know, I just love about Halloween. This film is like a nice haunted house.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you kind of get rushed through. There's some thrills and chills throughout, but not too scary, of course. But it still feels odd in its own way. You know, yeah. it's definitely not like a standard film. There is an element to it that I can't quite grasp that kept me very entertained, where I think it could have easily fallen to the point where I would have just been very bored by some of what was happening.
Right, yeah.
Things just, it's well paced, I believe. And there's some amusing performances, most notably by George.
Yeah.
As Mannheim Jarkov.
He's committed to the role.
Yeah. and there's just something I love about, like, slow budget cinema in general, that this really, it ticks the right boxes for that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it was overall a spectacular film, but it is an incredibly amusing film.
Yes.
With some unlicensed usage of Beatles songs, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
For that, I would give it 3 stars.
Yeah.
I think Satan's Lust, it wasn't a bust.
Well, I agree. I think that this was a lot of fun to watch. I wouldn't say that the sex scenes were particularly erotic, and it certainly doesn't reach the heights of over-the-top gore and stuff that we saw last week. It does reach quite some heights when it comes to villainous acting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely a highlight. Our 3 villains are all pretty good. Edith's a little flat, but what are you going to do? She does turn into a skeleton.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's not a talent that many have.
Yeah, I don't see Christian Bale turning into a skeleton.
No, he's just like, oh, I'm just going to eat an apple a day and lose a bunch of weight.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
He was kind of bony, but he was no skeleton.
No, there was meat on those bones. Little as there was.
But, no, Edith did the work, and she deserves praise for that, so... from all of us at the Raincoat Report, Edith, I don't have your credit. I don't know who you are, but good work. You really tried.
Amen.
And that's what I would say about everybody who worked on this film. You worked hard. You really tried.
Did your best.
But, yeah, I mean, the overall result was fun and entertaining. The sex scenes, again, aren't great, but at the same time, they don't last too long, thankfully, and, you know, they're good enough to see some titties and stuff.
You get lots of, if you like fake cum, there's loads of that.
Yeah, there is quite several loads of that, in fact.
If you got, like, a friend who wants to watch porn but is squeamish about cum, you can show them this one.
Yeah. But, you know, just have them ready for George Buckflower to be putting his finger in a girl's butt.
You didn't see that in Back to the Future.
No, you certainly did not. But no, instead we have Satan's Lust. It was a fine, fun watch.
Robert,
I liked
Zemeckis
it.
Is a pussy.
And I think that this deserves 3 stars, and Robert Zemeckis doesn't deserve any stars for this film.
No, he wasn't here at all.
No, but he does deserve a few stars, but all of them for Forrest Gump. No.
Give this film 4 gumps.
Yeah, 3 stars out of 5, but 4.5 gumps out of 5.
Yeah. A gump, you have to... It's adjusted.
You would say that the score itself was handicapped.
Oh, no.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Raincoat Report. RaincoatReport@gmail.com. And patreon.com/raincoatreport, where we'll talk about a kind of spooky other film this week. Enjoy that. And in the meantime, if you're going down to Satanic Studios to try out for a gig, don't forget your raincoat.
I feel sort of sick to my stomach. I could certainly understand that, honey.
Well, it's like, sort of like morning sickness.
Morning sickness?